The following podcast is provided to you free, as is all our content, at drhoffman.com. If you'd like to listen, help support Intelligent Medicine, and get great values by shopping at our supplement store, go to drhoffman.com and click on Shop, then click on the store. Thanks, and enjoy the podcast. Welcome to the Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and today's special edition of Intelligent Medicine Podcast has to do with a recent frontline investigative report on supplements. Some of you may have seen it. The January 19th broadcast of PBS's frontline report on supplements was actually so dreaded that it literally sent stock prices of major vitamin retailers like GNC and Vitamin Shoppe plummeting days before it aired. They've since recovered. But those of you who've seen Frontline know that it's kind of a hard-hitting expose about things like corrupt politicians, greedy military contractors. They did a special a couple of years ago about the emerging threat of ISIS. So viewers kind of knew what to expect on supplements. And I got to tell you, it wasn't pretty. So today we're going to talk to Dr. Daniel Fabricant. Dr. Fabricant is a PhD. He's executive director and CEO of the National Products Association, the NPA, which is the nation's largest and oldest trade organization representing the natural products industry. And he also has served recently as director of the Division of Dietary Supplement Programs of the U.S. Food and Drug Administration. So he's really been on both sides of the fence as both a regulator and as someone representing the industry. And as such, he was interviewed front and center in the Frontline investigative report. And so today I wanted to get his perspective, because maybe some of the stuff that he wanted to say on Frontline ended up on the cutting room floor. Dr. Fabricant, it's a pleasure having you on Intelligent Medicine.
Thanks, Dr. Hoffman, for having me on. I really appreciate the opportunity.
So, okay, did you, you know, you were interviewed and you had a chance to respond to some rather withering questions from the interviewer. Do you think that the Frontline report provided a, quote, fair and balanced assessment of the supplement industry?
No, it wasn't fair and balanced. I mean, you know, it was a, let's say, mildly shrouded hit piece, but that's, you know, that's fine. It's to be expected. I think that, you know, one thing we've learned, you know, and have known for a while is this is an area that news media is always interested. You have a commodity, one of the few commodities on the planet, that at least in this country and then probably the world over, half the people use on a day-in, day-out basis. So you're certainly going to get kind of a Hatfields versus McCoy's response, which I think is what, you know, we're used to seeing in the media.
Yeah, it was sort of lurid in its attempt to create an expose about the excesses of the supplement industry, outright fraud, exaggerated claims, poor regulation. And, you know, in this interview, you were actually accused by the interviewer, subtly or overtly, that you were part of a kind of a revolving door system in Washington where former regulators go to private industry or to trade groups and end up lobbying in favor of the industry, the very same industry that they regulated. So, however, I got to say that I have seen you speak, and to some extent, the supplement industry greeted your ascendancy to hit to the CEO position of the National Products Association with a little bit of trepidation, because they sort of said, "Hey, there's a new sheriff in town. This guy is a pretty strict regulator." And you know, my impression is that you came to sort of clean up the act of the supplement industry.
Well, I appreciate you saying that. I think, you know, look, I think my job, you know, a lot of people go, well, how can you go from one side to the other? And, of course, I've gotten my share of, let's just call it fan mail. People go, how can you do that? You know, for better or worse, you know, I think that a lot of times to, you know, there's an interface between industry and government, and that interface is generally, you know, through the regulatory corridor, if you will. And so having knowledge of both sides, I think, helps. I think it helps all parties, and also, ultimately, it helps the person who matters most, and that's the consumer. I think my job, whether I was at FDA or my job here at NPA now, it's ultimately about the consumer. Is I think, you know, we bring a lot of credibility, I think, and that's really the key thing for the consumer. Is I think people have questions. People don't have the time necessarily to study the science, which is my background, to really understand what is the what does a regulation or law mean in terms of what people can and can't say. And so I think that's really the critical thing. I've certainly been accused of the revolving door thing before, and, you know, it's a nice soundbite, but, I didn't hire myself at FDA and I didn't hire myself at NPA, so I think that there's certainly some wiser folks out there that say, hey, there's a real value here to what, you know, this person brings to the table.
Well, your front line went back to your tenure at the FDA, and they accused you, but, you know, not you personally, but the division that you were heading, the supplements division, of responding too slowly to supplement hazards during the time you spent there. And they cited several incidents where supplements caused harm. But, you know, I noticed that you kind of pushed back on that. And I think your contention was that the end result, which is the supplements were pulled from the marketplace, actually validates the effectiveness of the FDA.
Yeah, I think that's right. I think the conversation is changing. I mean, I think you saw even a follow-up in Joshua Sharfstein, who was a principal deputy commissioner at FDA, and he left just before I arrived at FDA. But even his dialogue, you know, the dialogue used to be the industry is unregulated. Now I think the tune is changing to, well, the tools are there, they're just tough to use. Well, I don't necessarily agree with that, because I use the tools and I use them in a way that nobody had before and with a frequency nobody had before. So I think the tools are there. I think they can be used. I think it's just a matter of, you know, it comes down to wills. And so I think that we also, you know, we made a clear in the frontline piece that, look, the types of evidence, you know, that the agency has to have to take action, well, you're taking away someone's livelihood, so it's got to be court ready, it's got to be airtight. And you know, the case in New York was interesting because, you know, emails lashed across the screen as the one doctor who you know, people first came in to, that we learned about the case from, well, that information was valuable. That doctor, you know, in one of the emails, it said he thought it was a potential carcinogen, you know, which it was nothing even close to that. You know, so, but the agency had to look at all possible causes. And when you think about that, you're an MD scientifically, of ruling out all possible causes of a certain type of injury. That's a lot of work.
Indeed. So, but, you know, I think the crux of the frontline piece was there was a constant drumbeat that we need more strong legislation, more strict regulation to prevent tragedies from occurring, to prevent the public from being exposed to hazards. And, you know, I'll quote, you know, one of the experts that they mustered for this frontline special. They said, drug makers have to prove their products are safe and effective before they send them to the market. And supplement manufacturers do not. So, you know, that was the main theme of this is that we ought to regulate supplements like drugs. Good idea? Bad idea?
I think, an unnecessary idea. I think what we've seen with the current regulatory framework is the FDA has all the authority they need to take action if there's a problem. I think we've also seen that problems are very, very, very rare in the supplement industry. And compared to drugs, these are things that have been in the diet that humans have used for centuries, if not millennia. And so, you know, no more would you require a gallon of milk to go through pre-market approval like a drug to say that calcium builds strong bones than you should require a calcium tablet. You know, and so I think that that's the important thing. You know, comparing drugs to supplements is comparing apples to oranges. We're not here to treat, cure, mitigate disease. We're here to help people maintain a healthy lifestyle, and that's clarified in the law. But I think to those folks that hold out, you know, it's always interesting to me to hear folks who aren't regulators, haven't been regulators, like the Paul Offits and Peter Collins, who were featured heavily in the piece, talk about what the perfect regulatory structure is. And they say, well, it's pre-market approval, yet they don't want to talk about some of the downsides of pre-market approval that have happened, like Vioxx, you know, OxyContin. These things were all pre-market approved and have, you know, have certainly harmed a lot more people than dietary supplements have.
Yeah, well, let's talk about Peter Cohen and Paul Offit. Paul Offit is an avowed supplement skeptic. He's author of a book that's somewhat snarkily titled Do You Believe in Magic?, which attempts to debunk virtually everything in the world of integrative medicine, acupuncture to homeopathy to vaccine skeptics. And he is no fan of supplements, actually has no expertise with supplements. He's a vaccine developer. But he actually states categorically, as if he were an expert on the subject, that there is, quote, no evidence that supplements beyond the RDA have any benefit whatsoever. And then he says it's a complete unknown when you buy a dietary supplement. Can you respond to that statement?
Yeah, you know, and what I think is even more amazing, I guarantee you, and I'll bet anyone dollar to donuts right now, Dr. Hoffman, if we walked into his hospital, his formulary, you know what's in the formulary? I bet you there's dietary supplements. I bet you there's iron dietary supplements. I bet you there's children's multivitamins. I bet you there's vitamin D vitamin supplements, calcium, things like that. So, you know, I think this is one of the challenges, and this is why, you know, I'm so grateful to talk to you and integrative physicians like yourself, is I think you've seen throughout the course of your practice, and I don't know why Dr. Offit doesn't understand this, but, you know, if you tell patients not to do something categorically and don't listen to them, they're going to do it anyway. They're just not going to tell you. And I think that that's where people like Dr. Off and Dr. Cohen missed the boat. Americans are going to take dietary supplements, you know, because they derive a benefit. And so to not engage them and not listen, I'm not saying, you know, people can't be skeptical, but what I am saying is, you know, really, we're going to say they don't work when there are drugs that are the same nutrients. How is it that the drugs work, but the supplements don't because they're supplements? I mean, you know, the science has to cut both ways. So I think that there's some hyperbole there that's really not honest.
Okay, well, so let's say that the Paul Offits of the world and the Peter Cohens of the world got their way, and what they would like to do is undo the, I believe it was a 1994 legislation, do I have the date correct, the DSHEA, Dietary Supplement Health Education Act, and create a system by which supplements get evaluated by the FDA and approved in a way similar to the way that drugs go through the approval process at the FDA. So what would be, hypothetically, what would be the result, what would be the consequence to the supplement industry if that regime were to be enacted?
Well, I think the consequence wouldn't be to the supplement industry, it'd be the consumers of supplements, as they would have a, you know, they want the choice in the marketplace of a variety of products, and I think that choice would be gone. You'd go, you know, to get a drug approved costs upwards of $1 billion and takes approximately 12 to 15 years. I mean, that's the current going rate. And so, you know, if we had to do that with vitamin C and calcium and things like that, I don't think that consumers would stand for it, one, but I mean, it would certainly limit access to the marketplace. I mean, I always remember seeing in the 1980s, the news stories in Russia where, you know, people lined up around the block to get a potato, and
right.
You know, you're similar type scenario there.
Right. So I mean, hypothetically, what we would see is a real dwindling down of the number of supplements available, perhaps some really restrictive potencies. They might say, well, no, you can't offer vitamin C beyond the RDA, which is, what, 60 milligrams per day of vitamin C, I think it is, or there would be limits placed on the potency of certain supplements. And maybe, just maybe, the pharmaceutical industry would be beneficiaries of that because they actually have the apparatus in place to do the regulatory schmoozing and the research that's necessary to get a product approved.
Well, but the problem would be, and why I think that it wouldn't be attractive to pharmaceuticals, is because you're dealing with natural components that you have no patent protection. I mean, we're
right.
Seeing that right now with the pharmaceutical industry. And so, yeah, I don't know that anyone would take up that sort of financial risk. You're going to spend that sort of money, and, you know, when will you be able to recoup that investment on, you know, 60 milligrams of vitamin C in 100 years? That doesn't sound like a good business model for anybody. But so that's why I think, again, that the current regulatory structure, it works. You know, it is really a test of willpower. The government can always say that they're underfunded, they need additional resources, and by and large, my experience, that's true. But that doesn't mean that nothing can be done. It just means that you have to prioritize and address those areas of, you know, FDA's job is in the harm removal business. And I think that, you know, during my tenure at FDA, we got rid of things that were harms, and that's really the important thing. No one wants to hear the story, the plane lands safe every day, but I mean, I think for dietary supplements, whether it's parents, whether it's children, whether it's the elderly, you know, at least half the country got up this morning and took a dietary supplement and went on about their day and felt better about it. So, you know, again, I think that their wishes and their dreams, you know, they're not really based in reality. And again, I think the consumers have largely spoken, and they're going to continue to use dietary supplements because they do derive a benefit.
Former FDA Chief David Kessler made an appearance in the Frontline special as well, and he was decrying the political power of vitamin advocates. And he said, and I'm quoting, "The supplement industry unleashes lobbying campaigns that are second to none." And he actually compared the power of the supplement consumers and their enthusiasm and vociferousness to that of Second Amendment zealots. You know, it's like, from my dead hand, will you pry my vitamin bottle? You know, to paraphrase Charlton Heston.
Yeah, it's interesting. You know, I love when, you know, I wish we had the coffers and the resources. I run a trade association that's about a $2 million a year budget. Compare that with, you know, the NRA, which is hundreds of millions of dollars. So I kind of laugh at the comparison. I think it's a bit much. But I do think that our consumers are dedicated and are willing to, you know, send emails and tell their elected officials that, hey, this is important to me, which I think is terrific and is important, is increasingly important. And we actually used that, you know, that last year. There was a bill introduced by Senator Blumenthal in the Senate, defense authorization, to limit access of supplements to soldiers. And soldiers have to do everything to stay healthy, you know. I mean, I think so. And when we salute them, you know, for their sacrifices they make, and we want to do everything we can to give them safe, effective products. But, you know, I think that a lot of that, you know, Kessler didn't get his way, I think, with the industry when Deshaies was passing, and I think it's still a sore spot for him, as, you know, as I guess a lot of people are apt to be. They don't like to lose, but at the same time, you know, I think looking at it realistically, the right public health measures were taken. I can't see how anyone who can really swear on a stack of Bibles and make any other argument. But, yeah, the notion that we somehow have this infinite pool of resources and infinite power in Washington, D.C., I only wish it were true. I'm trying to get us there, Dr. Hoffman, but I don't think it's going to happen in the next week.
So review for us a little bit, you know, what this framework is, Deshaies, because, you know, depending on what side of the argument you're on, Deshaies is a giveaway to the supplement industry. But there are actually people in the supplement industry who feel that Deshaies puts a lot of constraints on supplement manufacturers because they can't make even truthful claims about supplements. I mean, there's a lot of research about the benefits of various vitamin supplements, but you can't say that a supplement is good for a certain disease. You have to use kind of, well, call it weasel words to describe the benefits of supplements.
And that's fair. I've heard that criticism as well. So, you know, what Deshaies did is it did a few key things. One, it removed, FDA was trying to treat dietary supplements as food additives, which was a bit complicated because food additives had to go through certain pre-market approval, but it wasn't appropriate because, again, these are things that have been in the diet, vitamins, minerals, certain botanicals, amino acids. So it wasn't appropriate. They, you know, an apple doesn't have to go through pre-market approval, so why would an extract of an apple was kind of the logic, and it makes sense. So, you know, I think that was primarily what Deshaies did. But then you talk about the claims, and the claims are huge. Deshaies allowed, as it defined dietary supplements, for supplements to make structure-function claims. And those are what you said. You can't claim to cure, treat, mitigate disease as a structure-function claim, even if you have the research. So you can say that something supports healthy bones, like calcium supports healthy bones, or probiotics support, you know, healthy intestinal flora, you know, and I think that consumers, though, in consumer studies, consumers have a pretty good understanding of what those mean. If firms do have the type of data you're speaking of that shows that there's a prevention of disease or some sort of risk reduction, they can actually petition the government to make those claims. I'm sure many people have seen on calcium and vitamin D products the claim that says, you know, helps to reduce the risk of osteoporosis. That claim is, it was actually, the government had to pass a regulation. They were petitioned by firms to do that and were allowed to use it as such. So there are a lot of options to get claims and get that information to consumers, but I think to your point, the most important thing is consumers wanted that information. Consumers want to know, you know, and they already do know, especially now is the information age. If people don't think that the consumers aren't looking at, as I guess you probably deal in your practice with sometimes, Dr. Google, and look and see what the symptoms are and what the benefits are, I think people are misunderestimating the American public.
Indeed. All right. So as our listeners know, we divide these podcasts into two parts. So I want to continue our fascinating discussion with Dr. Daniel Fabricant. Dr. Fabricant is the CEO of the National Products Association, which was actually he was front and center in the recent Frontline expose of the so-called expose of the supplement industry. We wanted to give him a chance to respond to some of the allegations in the Frontline special, which was quite biased, attacking the supplement industry. So in part two, we'll continue our discussion of the PBS Frontline special with Dr. Daniel Fabricant. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is the Intelligent Medicine Podcast.